Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Patrick Come Lately Talk Radio. This is Stefan, your host, British by birth, American by choice. The Founding Fathers crafted some remarkable documents that led to the creation of a great country founded on liberty and self-reliance. I have lived in the Euro-socialist nightmare, and I'm doing what I can to return this country to the vision that the Founding Fathers gave us. We need to strive to rebuild that shining city on the hill, for without us, the world has nowhere to turn for freedom. For the next hour, I will be presenting news, views, and guests that help keep the true spirit of America alive. And a very happy new year to all my listeners. This is Stefan, Patrick Come Lately, British by birth but American by choice, welcoming you to the first show of year four. Yes, it's 4 years now, going into the fourth year, 3 years since I started, and I never thought I'd be going this long. So I'd like to thank all my listeners for the support over these 3 years, and especially now I've noticed my numbers have gone up significantly compared to what they were at the beginning. Very pleased with that, very proud of that, and thanks to everyone who does listen in. And I'd like to say hi to Mary, the first of the regular guests in the chat room there. Before we get to tonight's guest, because I did want to do a very special show, as this is the start of my fourth year, and I came up with a very special friend to come back to the show, someone who's been on before. But before I bring him in, I would like to just tell you a couple of things. And in the past, I used to do a quote from Winston Churchill, and I wanted to start off the show today with, and this is not actually a quote from him, this is actually a prayer that he did reference, though, a number of years ago, but a prayer from the Siege of Gibraltar. As you know, Gibraltar is a little piece of rock at the end of Spain, which the British captured in the 18th century and then spent a lot of time defending, and there were actually something like, I think, 15 or 16 sieges of Gibraltar, not including, of course, during World War II as well, but a very key part of the British Empire there. And in one of the sieges, either 1727 or 1787, I'm not sure which one, I couldn't find out exactly which one, but it was around that time, and I felt this is a good one for the times we're in today. And the prayer at that time was, "Fear not the result, for either thy end shall be enviable and a majestic one, or God will preserve our reign upon the waters." And I thought that's a good one for these troubled times we're in. And also, once we start talking about the stories of tonight's guest, I think also a good one for him. Two other quick things I'd like to handle before I bring our guest in. And first one is talking about this year, for the first time, I think, or at least the first time in a long time, 2013, both Groundhog Day and the State of the Union Address will occur on the same day, coincidentally. It is a very ironic juxtaposition of events. One of them involves a meaningless ritual in which we look to an insignificant creature of little intelligence for prognostication. The other one involves a groundhog. Think about that one. And finally, just a quick shout out. I was approached recently on Facebook, and as you know, there are all sorts of petitions that you can sign up for at whitehouse.gov, and I'd like you to go and look for one. I don't have the link. It's a very long, complicated link, so I think you have to go and do your own search. But there's one out there petitioning the administration to televise all closed-door meetings for better government accountability. So if you look for that, televise all closed-door meetings for better government accountability, I think that would be a great petition to sign. And if they can get the 25,000, then the administration have agreed that they will provide an answer as to what they're going to do about that. Anyway, on to our guest tonight. I've had... This guest on before. His name is Ari, or Rex Reapy, and he writes books. I guess you could, I wrongly called them on the previous time he was on, Tea Party genre. They're more Liberty genre, and he's a very prolific writer. He does write other genres as well, but recently he's been writing books, Liberty, like I said, the Liberty genre, talking about sometime a little bit in the future, unfortunately not that far in the future, and talking about a dictator in this country and how liberty-loving people basically fight against the dictator and basically carve out their own world and slowly expand that. And in the books, you also find out that this spreads to almost all of the United States at one time. So, with no further ado, let me bring in my special guest, and my thanks to Rex for joining me on this very special first show of the fourth year. Rex, are you there?
Yes, sir. How are you doing, Stefan?
I'm doing great, and how are you doing? Happy New Year.
Disturbing New Year. How are you and the family doing?
Oh, well, we're thinking positive. We're going to do okay this year. Won't be great, we know, because of everything that's going on in Washington, but we're going to survive. We're going to get through this, and we'll see what the future brings.
Good. I think the future is going to be interesting.
Oh, very, very definitely. Now, for those who don't know Rex has at least came to my attention with a trilogy of books that he wrote, although when I interviewed you, I think you were just getting ready to release the third of the trilogy, and we talked about the first two books in that series, which were FEMA Camp 37 and 43.
That's correct.
I sometimes call it FEMA Camp 42, but it's actually 43, right?
43.
Yeah.
That's correct. I was wrapping up Sin City Prison.
Yeah, and these are great, I'd almost call them sort of futuristic westerns in a way. You've got the good guys, the bad guys, and, you know, really rip-roaring adventure books. I really enjoyed them, and then, of course, Sin City came out. But I did want to have you back on, like I said, on this special show, because you did just in December release the fourth book in the series, so the trilogy became a full-blown series called Starvation Nation. Maybe you'd like to quickly run through the first three and just talk a little bit about, you know, the rough story there, and then tell the listeners a bit more detail about Starvation Nation.
Well, all right. FEMA Camp 37 and 43 in Sin City Prison, in a nutshell, kind of takes the perspective of people that are actually taking it to the government. It's a dictatorship. They've lost their rights. They gave up their guns. They've gave up their freedoms, and they've got what they deserved, really. But when I did 37 and 43, I was in the Sin City prison, and you know, my books come to me in dreams. People find that hard to believe, but it is. For some reason, I have the capacity to sit down at the computer and put on a headset with Pink Floyd blaring and a 7 and 7. And when I start, I can type very fast. And when I start typing, the screen disappears, and I'm watching a movie. I cheat. There's no outline. I'm just typing what I see. And when we had 43 completed, Marcia, she's here. She's my editor. She's also a co-writer. We were kind of hesitant to tackle Sin City Prison, but because you always want to elevate what you've done before. And 37, I was real happy with. 43 is my favorite of the four. It started out as a love story. And when we went to Sin City Prison, there were children involved. Marcia said, if you want to really get higher, involve children, which was a really good thing. But we was at one part of the story where the kids were trying to escape the Hussein guard, and I stopped on this story. And then when I started, I was going to bring them in later, and she said, there's no way that any freedom-loving American, red-blooded American man or woman would let some goons grab three kids. So that cost me 40,000 words right there in that story. Sin City turned into be an epic adventure, 380 pages, 150,000 words. And I was real happy.
It's a long one, right?
What's that?
It's a long one. Sorry for interrupting. It's a long one, but it's a good story.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, I have people kind of being come known here in Vegas as in the locals, and I was always being told, well, I couldn't put the book down. It took me like 10 hours, but I couldn't put the book down. And Team Account 43 was a little bit longer. But when I got into Sin City Prison, I wanted to make it an epic adventure, and that's what I did. You can't read that book, and people don't understand. That's 380 pages on an 8.5 by 11 inch format. The covers are spectacular. The books in printed form look great on anybody's coffee table in their living rooms.
But, which is where mine sit, by the way.
The first one that's told me that, man. What's strange is out here now, I have people that come up to me and they bought the book and they want my autograph, you know, and I've never met them before. And I have thoughts of John Lennon, you know, you just don't know what's going on. But, and you have them, they'll come up and they'll say the last, I'm kind of notorious for real powerful epilogues. You've read my books in the FEMA Camp series, they're always, the epilogue and the prologue's told from the, and the story itself really is from the perspective of a strong female. I don't know why I do that. I got a little worried about being that way, but it's just the way it works out. And now I've noticed, like, the last line of the epilogue, I had one come up on Las Vegas Worm Club the other day, and he said, Francis came home, you know, or one at Sin City Prison, we are family. You know, the last line, kind of like, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. You know, it's just totally a weird situation. But I'm getting more comfortable with it as time goes on. But when we finished Sin City Prison, about when I got to the last couple of chapters, I had the dream for Starvation Nation. And I started telling Marcia, I always have dreams. So, I mean, there's no writer's block in this place. And I kept telling her, I said, man, I had a really good dream, a good story, it's a continuation, but it's not really a part of the FEMA camp, but it is. It's a standalone story. And I started telling her about it, and she was reluctant to do it. And then one night I was dreaming I was on a plateau, and I was looking down, and I could see 37 and 43's plateau, and I was standing on Sin City, and I was looking up, and there's this really high plateau. So I finally worked up the courage, took a run, and jumped, and I discovered I could fly. And I landed on top of Starvation Nation. So I woke up and I started typing away. I usually wake up at 4:15 and start doing what I have to do. And she wakes up later. By the time she woke up, I had gotten through to Starvation Nation to the point where the main character, Isaac, who's also known as Hell, and if you read the book, you'll understand why he has to call himself that, and his sister, Lizzie, meet this 12-year-old little street smart. Everybody's met a kid like that in their life. The ones that are just won't take the word no, and he's street smart. He survived. He's seen things that nobody should ever see in life in the town of Ely, which is a small town here in Nevada. And when I got to that point, and the description of his little brother Danny, the 20-pound, 2-year-old boy, I threw it in her lap, and then she came in. I always know when I have a good story because I make her cry. When I see her cry, I know I'm on the right track. And she said, let's go with it. And then we took off. And, you know, about 6 weeks later, the story was finished.
Tell them 12-year-old boy's name.
Oh, yeah. You know what 12-year-old boy I'm talking about. That was the...
Well, I was about to say, I'd kind of teased my listeners and said, there is a connection between yeah. Starvation Nation and Patrick Come Lately, and you...
Yes, what was that was, when I threw the original transcript down, I gave the young man, who is a very integral part of this story, I mean, you love him at the end of it, and I gave him the name Steve Smith, and Marcia says, is that the best you can do? And I said, what do you mean? And she says, well, he seems like he should have a more regal name. So I said, well, and she said, what about Stefan? I said, all right, well, I would just go all the way, and why would we make his last name Bartle? And that's what we did. And then later on, when Isaac or Hell telling him he can't go into this kid, he realizes, because he's seen people being killed, being eaten by cannibals because people are starving to death. The government's using food as a weapon. He, in the story, you get the strong impression that he has found something special with the Hasty family. The Hasties were raised in a sheltered environment. They've never been anywhere. 20 years old, 17 years old, and 15 years old. And he realizes there's food, there's security, this is something special, and he wants to fight for it. And that's where the story starts taking off, and he just can't say the word no. And you know the reasons why they had to wear the Guy Fawkes mask and that they resembled too much like the Scouts with 500 million credit.
About Imp.
Yeah.
The name Imp.
Yeah, so that's where we came up with the name Imp. I originally was going to call him Beelzebub, or Bub for short, and she said, nah, Imp fits, and it did. Yeah, yeah Imp did.
Oh yeah, he's well. I was, as we say on the other side of the pond, I was tickled pink with being honored in such a way. And you know, you're a true friend, Rex, to have done that. I'm really, was really pleased. And by the way, just to let you know, because you did change my surname a little bit, but I wanted to let you know, in actual fact, that was the original family name. My family actually comes from the northwest part of Germany many, many years ago. And they actually moved to Poland somewhere in the mid-19th century, so 1850, 1860, we believe. We're not absolutely certain. And what they did somewhere around that time when they moved to Poland, they actually added the sort of the Polish thing of SKI at the end of name. That was added later, so you got it more right than you might have thought there. So,
those dreams are powerful dreams. It's hard to find. I think it's hard to hide the truth from them. You said you came from Germany.
Well, the family started off, yes, northwest Germany. It's actually called Ostfriesland, and as you know, I'm married to a Dutch girl, and Friesland is kind of part. Spans Germany and part the northeastern part of the Netherlands. So, but we came from that northwest part of Germany. So there's a German connection there.
Yeah, the Reapies came from Minden, Germany. That's close
okay.
by.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. But like I said, we got into that, and it just took off from there. You know, I was trying to concentrate on this story of, you've read some of my other books, and there always is a religious undercurrent, love of country, and a love of family. And I've stressed that family connection pretty strongly and kind of backed off on the religious undercurrent, the undertow, but I kind of concentrated a little bit more brusquely on it in this, and it came across fine. But, like, things like you're telling me there about the Bartle name, you know, that kind of validates what I've been saying all along. People think you get a little loopy because, you know, they come to you in dreams. I don't sit down and do an outline. There's no such thing. I just go. I just watch what's on. I cheat. You said I'm a prolific writer. The reason is when I have a dream, it's like I'm in a video library somewhere, and I say, wow, look at this one, and has my name on it. I said, no, they made a movie of this book, you know. So I just get to pick the ones I want to watch, and there's been some really great ones. I've been blessed.
I have to tell my listeners, Rex very kindly started emailing me copies of the draft of the book, even before it was finished. So he had me on tenderhooks because sort of once a week or so he would send me a new draft, and I'd think, oh, finally, the end of the book, I get to find out what happens, and I'd read a bit further, and all of a sudden it would stop again. And I was sort of going, come on, Rex, I want to find out what's happening. So I was very pleased when finally in December I was able to read the whole thing. And folks, it is another good rip-roaring adventure. If you know Rex's books, you know that they're rip-roaring adventures, as I said, sort of kind of Western-type stories, but set in the future, and the good guys and bad guys, and the bad guys, of course, are the government, and the good guys are freedom-loving patriots, and it's just a great rip-roaring story. And
some of my people tell me it's Zane Grey with a touch of George Orwell in it, you know, which is a pretty flattering compliment. You know?
Yeah, I think, like I said, there's because you situate them in Nevada, of course, there is definitely that Western touch to it. And so if you haven't read any of the books, these are great books. As Rex says, Starvation Nation kind of stands alone. You don't have to read the preceding trilogy, although it makes a little bit more sense if you do, I think. But I've also confessed, I guess I'm biased as my name appears there. I think Starvation Nation, I like the most of the four. I like the family side to the whole thing, and it's just a great story.
Well, in my novels, I very often take names from my Facebook friends, especially the ones I like, and then the ones that are real assholes, they're the villains.
That's one way to do it.
There is a Ken England.
Yeah. I have to thank you for one thing as well before I forget, Rex. I remember in one of your emails you said, you know, read the story, you'll see something come up that you probably like, and that was, of course, Imps, Stefan Bartel. But I remember one of the emails he said, but, you know, the book's not finished yet, and I don't know whether he's going to make it to the end.
Hey, you and Marcia have a lot in common. Marcia knows my penchant for writing characters out or killing them off.
Yeah,
I just have this thing about, you know, hey, everybody remembers Gone with the Wind because of Bonnie Blue. And in my novels, it's not just one or two that could be taking exit any time. But after what happened in Sin City Prison, and you know what I'm talking about without giving away that story, when I was writing Starvation Nation, she was doing the same. You're not going to kill off Imp, are you? You're not going to kill off Imp, are you?
Well,
so in one part of the book, I don't even remember when one of the characters, something does happen to him, and Hell rides up and sees Imp's body lying 20 foot away.
Yeah.
I stopped the print right there and gave it to her, and I wound up sleeping on the couch that night.
Well.
She was mad, man.
Yeah.
But she never knows, and like I said, nobody knows until they get to the last chapter or two chapters. This book, I had like 9 or 10 loose ends to tie up, and the chapters up to that point are 30, 35 pages each. But that 5 years chapter, that was the shortest chapter, but that's a chapter that'll hammer you and knock you in the ground. The thing, there's no action in there, but there's a lot that has an impact in the story, that and the epilogue. So I was real happy with that.
Yeah, and you did tie up the loose ends very well, and you know, revealing that Imp does not get killed off doesn't spoil the story in any way, because, as you said, you've got so many other things going on, and but you tie them up very, very well. And folks, let me just say, you know, if you like adventure stories, these are great books. If you haven't read them, you know, you can get them on Amazon, you can get them for the Kindle. And that's, you know, they're really great. I'm going to take a quick break here, Rex, if I may.
Okay.
And just play the station ID and one of my fellow hosts their little conservative minute, and we'll come back in about a minute and a half.
The Freedom Swings Conservative Minute. Hello, freedom lovers. Welcome to 2013. Most years start off with a lot of promise, but 2013, not so much. The bell rung midnight, and no deal was made on the fiscal cliff. Speaker Boehner didn't follow my advice and have everybody vote present. And Mitch McConnell sold his soul and actually got an agreement in the Senate. These people seem to think that everybody's going to like them if they keep their taxes from going up. All they are doing is kicking the can down the road of the inevitable collapse of our economy. The only thing that's going to wake this nation up is when the freeloaders realize the free ride is over. You can listen live to the Freedom's Wings show on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time and Saturdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time at www.blogtalkradio.com/Freedom's Wings. You can also catch the rebroadcast at redstatetalkradio.com and ftrradio.com. And check out freedomswingspolitics.com for political analysis, news, wings gear, and much, much more.
This is Patrick Cumlately Talk Radio, coming to you live via the internet, via rebroadcast on WRSDB, the Red State Talk Radio Network, or from the recordings at archives.patrickcumlately.us. And thank you for sticking with us through the break. I have as a guest tonight Rex Reapy, writer, a prolific writer of a number of books, but first came to my attention for what I call the liberty genre, FEMA Camp 37, FEMA Camp 43, and Sin City Prison. Of course, today we've been talking about Starvation Nation, as I indicated in my tease. That was one where my name appears, and I was very honored that that Rex would choose me for one of the key characters there. You can see my face; it's really red. And Rex, once again, thanks for that. But I'd like to move on to some of the other books. You're such a prolific writer. Can I move on, or is there anything else you'd like to talk about Starvation Nation?
No, move on.
Okay, because the other one, and you indicated, in your books, especially the FEMA Camp series, if I can call it that, you do have all these very strong women, the scouts, women scouts, so no problems with the EEOC there, but you had another book where perhaps the men are a little strong, and that was a book called Worm Club, and you indicated to me that was kind of a precursor to the FEMA Camp series. Talk a little bit about the Worm Club, please.
Well, the Worm Club was my first year was all sci-fi, science fiction, 2101 Chronicles, 7 books, that's 1 million words, those 7 volumes, over 1 million.
Wow.
And I felt like I kind of was getting not so much burned out, but I need to reach people other, because a lot of people, they won't read sci-fi. So I have these characters. I live in a community. There's a lot of retired people, a lot of Vietnam vets, and they're constantly slamming Obama, and they're telling about the government comes here to get my guns. They're going to have a fight. You know, the old war stories. Meet them every day at 10:30 to get the mail. They're hanging around there drinking coffee. So I decided, one day I was talking about in Obamacare that they're requiring our RFID chip to be implanted in people to get medical treatment. It's supposed to happen this October in 2013, and they had a real adverse relationship. So I just decided to craft a story around these radicals. And in that book, I said that the wheel fell off the country in 2013 in January. And the tales, I originally had it as 2015, but I knocked it back a year. I wanted to sell some books, So I actually used their names in there and used some of their characteristics, and it's a pretty wild tale. But to make a long story short, one of the characters is the guy named Dennis steals two. He works out at Indian Wells, tells everybody he's a nuclear engineer, and he steals two suitcase atomic bombs. And by the way, he's the village idiot in this community. He voted for Obama. he tells everybody that. But at any rate, they wind up blowing up Hoover Dam, and people start leaving Las Vegas. It was just a fun story to write. And in my books, I always try to have young people. There's the Brat Pack. I was going to do a sequel called The Brat Pack, but in there you know about Lee and his friends and the things they go through, and kind of the same thing, good against evil. But that turned out to be another action-packed fun thing to write, and I left it hanging in the end, thinking there would be a sequel. I'm not so sure I want to do it, but I've already seen the movie, and that led to the... Actually, after that, I wrote ARCs. And when I wrote ARCs, when I finished it, I submitted the cover and the book to the L. Ron Hubbard Writers of the Future contest. That I made it to the finals, but they wouldn't accept ARCs because it was 86,000 words. And that kind of ticked me off. And I got the notification Friday that they wouldn't take the book, but they wanted the cover, or unless I could submit an abbreviated version of ARCs. So that's when I wrote a book called Prison City, and I ended right at 16,999 words. And that was actually the forerunner for Sin City Prison. And that's when I had my first dream with the FEMA Camp series. And needless to say, they wanted me to wear a tux and get a haircut, and I'm not that type of person. So that's when that was right between ARCs. That was the reason that I wrote the FEMA Camp series, because, you know, here, they're not accepting me for what I am. So that was a fun... ARCs turned out to be a real fun sci-fi book. I really enjoyed writing that.
And I enjoyed reading it. We'll get to that one in a moment. But The Worm Club as well is also a standalone story. It has nothing to do with the other ones, but still very interesting how they... And a lot of what you see in your books, Rex, unfortunately, you're very prophetic, because these things, you know, a lot of what you're saying seems to be happening.
Well, I've had people before accuse me of, like, I'm mongering fear or fear-monger. Now those same people, they are scared. They are worried. Recently, I've been getting a lot of these psychics, especially from the New York City area, that have heard about it, and they're saying those are visions, and I don't agree with that. They're just dreams. That I was doing it just for the fun of it. You know, I almost died 3 years ago this past October. It came real, real, real close. And before then, I was doing some writing, but the dreams, the capacity to remember them when I'm conscious, really didn't start kicking in till then, and Marcia will tell you, I'll just sit down and I'll just knock out 5-10,000 words in about 5 hours. And the biggest drag is she finally came on board. I said, look, I need some help, man. I'm popping out some books here, but proofreading and editing, that takes a lot of time, and she's excellent. She's great for continuity, and, you know, she scares me because she'll come up and say, hey, look, you need to go off in this tent, and she comes up with a storyline off to the side. She was a lot of Starvation Nation. That's why there was, by the time we got to the last chapter, there was eight or nine stories I had to tie together. But it worked. We work well together. We've always been a team. We've been together for 40 years, always been a team. And so we do it just because it's fun. When it quits being fun, I'll quit doing it.
Yeah, well, tell Marcia she... you know, she's. I think she's an important part of those books, and I know she appears in a lot of the books as well. I haven't, for example, I haven't read Resurrection yet. That's another book, part of the 2101 Chronicles. But I see that Marcia appears in that, not as a person, but as a little as a little block. So I'm just getting ready to start that one. So those are the sci-fi ones. Okay, well, let's move on to ARCs, because just to let people know, so we're moving moving away. Although even in ARCs, there's there's a little bit of a liberty type approach there, in that you know, ARCs is the story of these ships that come down. And, you know, ETs come out, and basically it's ordinary people that get involved, interact with these, and they don't really seem to want to interact with the government. So there's that definite undertone there of, you know, we don't like the government.
Well, the ARCs, some of the theologians like it, really like it. Some are a little disturbed by it. But basically the premise of it is that the ARCs were, the Earth originally was just a seeding, a colony for humans. And that's what their job is to do. ARCs is actually, it's ARCs, ARCs from Heaven Incorporated. And if you notice, the word heaven has periods. It stands for human evolutionary. It's a network and it's a corporation. And it's from a long ways away, and their job is to go around and spread the human species throughout the universe. That's what they do. And so they get word that a solar flare is going to wipe out this colony, but they don't check up on you but every now and then. And where I got a lot of criticism was they sent one of their sociologists, his name was Jesus, and he got killed, you know. Oh, it gets crazy. But the story starts out with a young writer who was contacted by these two people to write the six ARCs. One shows up in Vegas, five in the fields of Kansas, and, you know, the world goes into a tizzy. And these two people portray to be publishers and say, hey, write a book in 30 days about this, and we can make a lot of money. You know, it's kind of from a capitalist standpoint, but it's more than that. So the guy writes this book in 30 days, and it's, the story runs parallel to what happens to him in the story. It was a really challenging write, and it was really interesting to perform the functions of what you go through with publishing with relations to advertising. And what was funny is when they guarantee him he's going to advertise and that money can't buy it, and all of a sudden the cover of his book appears on the side of these ARCs.
Yeah.
And they find out that they've sent there to take just 3 million people off the face of the earth, that it's about to be destroyed by a solar flare. And that's where it gets involved with the government. They're wanting certain people, you know, they're threatening to kill them, the ARCs, and the ARCs are impenetrable. And they're 40 miles long and 6 miles in circumference. And they're designed to hold 3 million people. So the story involves the struggle and selection process. And if you notice in there, I have a character called the Old Man. A lot of my novels always have a character like the Old Man somewhere in it, because I'm trying to convey the fact that, you know, there are some old guys running around that still do believe in what this country stands for, and that, you know, they are willing to teach if they're willing to listen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course,
it turned out to be a really good story. It's a fun read, man.
Oh, it is. It is. And that was one, I actually started it late one afternoon, and my wife was very annoyed at me because I basically... I read that one all the way through till sort of, I can't remember, 1 o'clock in the morning or something. I'm a bit of a speed reader, and that has advantages and disadvantages, but, you know, I just couldn't put it down. And I said, you know, I'm going to read this straight through. So
that's why I like sci-fi. I can make my own rules and you let your imagination run wild. You know, you got anti-grab bikes and, you know,
yeah,
lasers or whatever you want, androids, and, you're only limited by your imagination, and Marshall will tell you I have an overactive imagination.
But I have to say, with ARCs, you're not that far out. The bracelets is, I would say, really the thing that's the furthest out. I mean, sort of say, if we did have people or entities out there that have been going longer than us, then a lot of the things you're talking about are not that far out, but the thing that's the most far out really are the bracelets.
Yeah, the bonding chip, the artificial intelligence that mounts,
yeah,
on your left wrist.
Yeah.
Yeah, they actually not only take a sample of your DNA, they actually can make a carbon copy of all your feelings, your thoughts, and your emotions. And in the end, you find out what the significance of those little artificial intelligence plates are. And
yeah, I don't want to spoil too much with that.
Yeah.
Just tell folks those bracelets are quite important.
They're very important, and what it is in a nutshell, these people, they're aliens, but they're just like us. They're just like us, and they've been around 500,000 years, minimum. And so their technology is so vastly superior, it just boggles your imagination. But the artificial intelligence chips, these people, they live for actually, they live forever. If you've read the story at the very end and you see how I turned a trick in that. But the importance of the AI chips is that once you meet a mate, a bonding mate, that their colors turn blue or red. And that's how they find the person that they spend the rest of their life with. It's a really good story.
It's a great story. A little creepy, though, you know, having to rely on a chip to tell you rather than your own feelings. But if I look at the rate of the divorce and stuff here in America, maybe that would be a better way to go, right?
Well, the chip is really just an echo of what's in your heart and your mind. And the only thing is, how many times have people have passed as ships in the night, and maybe that was the perfect mate for them for the rest of their lives? So what the chips do, or the artificial chip does, is through light or color, they realize that when they meet somebody, that that's maybe the person they should spend their life with. They still have the choice of whether to do that or not. But, you know, how many times has that happened? That happened to me and Marcia. We grew up together, went to church together, all through when we were kids. We were best friends, and she went her way, and I went mine for a little while, and just by the grace of God, one night,
it was on Christmas Eve,
I stopped, there was the only bar in town was open, she was in there, and I walked in, because I had to, you know, drop off my kids for my first marriage. It was the first time I'd ever missed a Christmas with them, and I said, man, I just happened to go in there, she's in there, I hadn't seen her like in 18 years, we've been together ever since, so. But I was thinking about going on home because I only had $10 on me at the time.
Yeah.
But I mean, well, been together. I mean, together ever since. So she wouldn't let me go home that night. And we've been with each other since. You know. But like, what would it be like if you had a AI chip when you was 15, 16, 17, 18 years old, and maybe it wasn't puppy love? You know, the chips are just an extension of your mind and your feelings and your heart and your soul. So. A lot of people would probably like that, because how many times have you seen that certain girl? She looks so good, and she likes you, but you're just too intimidated to go up and say, hey, what's happening, you know? your chip's glowing bright red, baby. Like I said, I thought that book, when the old man and his wife had been together forever, he says, we don't even need to turn the lights on at night when we're together. The humor of my novels, man, every chance I get.
Yeah, well, that, you know, and that is that's part of the you know, part of the thing that it's that book is totally different from the other books.
I changed. The Chronicles is a lot different. Did you read did I send you the Staff of Joe?
No, you sent me book two of the Chronicles. So that's the one I'm going to start.
The Staff of Joe is just an outrageous story. God comes back to Earth because things have gone all to hell. People are in FEMA camps. They're forced labor, and nobody knows what to do. The government really got an upper hand, and God comes back and gives the staff of Moses to this guy named Joe, and that tells him to go to Washington, D.C., and I bring back George Carlin as the driver of this RV diesel pusher on the way to Washington. Oh, it's an outrageous story with George Carlin.
And
George Burns is God. I bring
Morgan Freeman's
God sometimes. And,
yeah.
And they're trying to kill him off. And it really has a twist, strange twist in that story. And in the end, you know, it's like some of my typical books. It's going to make you cry and flip out a little bit. But that leads to the Staff of Joe, too, with the young man, Billy. And that brings in the character of the old man from the Chronicles, and the third book's called The Time Lord of God, and I wrote that with the perspective, wouldn't everybody just, you know, you talk about Germany, you think about your ancestors, couldn't somebody go and assassinate Hitler? I mean, what's wrong with our ancestors in Germany at the time, you know? But everybody, I think, would like the opportunity to have a breakfast with Hitler by themselves, knowing what he did later on. But it's a great dynamic story, too. But that's a trilogy, and it ends up as that. But basically, the old man, you find out that God created 10,000 universes and 9 of them are really screwed up. So he tries to have this guy go back and change time with the war bikes. And it's a sci-fi book, but I don't know. When I sit down, I just pick out a movie. I'm working on one now. I'm thinking about starting. I've got two in mind. I've got Wiley McFoster Jr., the character from Sin City Prison, taking the FEMA Camp series 25 years into the future, where the Pale Riders in her 60s and all these other characters in the FEMA Camp series book. But I also had a dream called Capsule that just fascinated me, and you actually go 500 years into the future to see what the world is really like in Nevada.
When you tell people a movie, they might think it's actually a movie. This is just a mental movie.
It's a dream.
It's one of his dreams.
I call them movies.
Well, and you know, I mean, you're so lucky to be able to do that you can just run it out that way. Hey, Rex, I'm going to take one final quick break.
Okay.
If that's okay with you, and then we'll be back in about a minute and a half.
We'll be here.
Doc White here of the Conservative Underground Show with this week's Conservative Minute. In a few days, 2012 comes to a close. Personally, I had a fantastic year. I cannot say the same for our republic. How many of you grew tired of the political ads? How many of you grew more and more frustrated with all the politics being played on every issue imaginable, even those very important issues where there should be no Democrat versus Republican? We have a choice heading into 2013. Apathy can set in, or we can take ownership of this republic again and fight back. It is time to reawaken this industrial giant. Government must get back within its means and lighten our punitive tax burden. Big government liberalism is bankrupting our republic and must be stopped. If we are to grow personally and become successful, so too must our republic, for so long as we can keep it. Listen to the Conservative Underground Show at theconservativeundergroundshow.podomatic.com.
This is Patrick Cumlately Talk Radio, coming to you live via the internet, via rebroadcast on WRSDB, the Red State Talk Radio Network, or from the recordings at archives.patrickcumlately.us. And thank you for sticking with us through the break. I'm talking to Rex Reapy, author of the FEMA Camp series of books and many, many others. We've been talking also about his sci-fi books. Rex, as we get into the final part of the show here, you said you were looking at some new books. You talked about a Second Staff of Joe book. You mentioned you've already got one, and then the one that's kind of a follow on from Sin City Prison. What other movies have you been watching in your mind?
Well, I had one called Yellow Tide. I like that. There was also, I had a dream the other night of the Life and Times of Michael Hastie. That's off the Starvation Nation. He was a real key part. You know, that's him's half brother, adopted brother, adopted. In the epilogue, you get the impression he never married, because he became the leader for Free America. He replaced Zach, old Zach.
Mm-hmm.
And in the capsule, what I didn't tell you, in the capsule, what I saw was, you know how crazy old Zach is, the older Zach in Sin City Prison and
right.
And all of them. He's out there. He's a leader of Free America. And right before he dies, he gets treated like Walt Disney supposedly did. He gets cryogenically frozen. At least instructions not to revive him until he's got a perfectly healthy body. And that's where I was going with the capsule, that 500 years later he comes to in Fort Hastie. But I'm thinking, man, I don't know if I want to get sci-fi involved with the FEMA Camp series. I can make that stand alone, but there's a ton of them. And the Chronicles alone, there's 7 books. You could off the Chronicles, you could write 80 or 90. And usually when I have a dream, I'll jot down a note, on the computer, keep a file. I mean, just a couple of key words I can think, oh, gee, And I don't know what to expect. You can ask Marcia. Some of my dreams, I've gotten where I can control my body, but sometimes, man, I've broken my hand, smashing a wall, fighting, you know, monsters. Or
I keep the baseball bat next to the bed.
Yeah, I get pretty active in my dreams. The other night, I dreamt I was on this world, and I was strolling along the shoreline, and this damn snapping turtle, it was 300 pounds. You know about them in Florida. Jumped out of the water, had me pinned. And I couldn't move my arms, and I was yelling, "Help, help, help, Marcia. Takes the bat out. You better wake up. You better wake up," you know. But I have some pretty active dreams, but it's fun. I enjoy going to sleep. It's an escape mechanism for me to have a good time. I don't tell her about those really good dreams, though.
I'm just looking in the chat room. Mary says she doesn't have enough years left to read all his books. And I just want to say to Mary, yes, you do, because once you pick one up, you won't put it down. So you'll go through, you know, even if you're a slow reader, you'll go through it in a couple of days, because you'll just want to get to the end of those books because they're just such great stories. So
highest compliment, I had this one sheet when she read Starvation Nation, and she got to the 5 years later chapter in the epilogues. She said, went back to the beginning and read it, and it had more meaning. That's a sign you've written a pretty good book when they come in there with so many tie-ins, and it just, oh my God, I think I remember reading that, you know. And I had another lady, she told me she's read FEMA Camp 43 three times, you know.
I'm going to have to go back and reread some of them, because, like I said, I'm a speed reader, which is an advantage. I get through them very quickly. And the good thing is, as you read it, you remember stuff. But I have to read it almost straight through or pretty quickly, because 3 weeks later, I may not remember everything about the book. And I've had occasion when 2-3 years later, I'll pick up a book and I'll get one third of the way in, and I say, hang on, I know how this ends because I've read this before, but I didn't realize when I first started. And, you know, that's because I speed read, and you don't always remember everything. But all of a sudden you say, no, wait, I know what's going to happen on the next, you know, in the next chapter or something. I say, yeah, okay, I've read this one before, but I'm going to go back and read Starvation Nation, because there's so much in there, and also the FEMA Camp series, because again, once you've read all the way through, then you can go back and you can understand more. Once you know what's coming, you can understand more at the beginning as well.
Yeah, there's stories. They're nothing like charts or graphs or like a lot of these other FEMA Camp stuff. They're actually tales about people, good and bad. I think the highest form of compliments I've gotten from emails from people is after they've read one of the books, they tell me that the tale haunts them, especially Sin City Prison. They said that story haunts them, you know, and that's pretty flattering.
Yeah. Well, and if you think about it, all of them, especially, as I said, because so much of what you talk about, You think when you first start reading, oh yeah, it's a great story and kind of this couldn't happen. But then you start reading more and you say, but hang on, this did happen or that did happen. And you know, this, it looks like this could happen. So, you know, in that way, they're also slightly frightening because you sort of suddenly realize, hang on, they're not that far out.
We just watch the news every night. NDAA, I just read a report that we're not producing near enough food to feed the people in this world. It's going to happen, and food's a powerful weapon. You know, it'll eventually happen. Once they take your guns, I think when the card falls out in Starvation Nation from Hellfire Hastie that he's written to his sons and says, first they took our religious liberty, then they took this, and they came after our guns. Now they're after they took our food. Now they're after our families. There's some powerful parts in Starvation Nation that'll make you think and make you feel pretty uncomfortable, especially if you're watching the news every night.
Exactly. Okay, well, we're getting close to the end of the show. Rex, I want to thank you again for coming on this very special show, and once again, thanks for featuring my name in your book. I'm you know, really honored that you did that. You're a true friend, and I look forward to getting out to Vegas sometime, as I said, and I owe you dinner, you and Marcia dinner for this, so I have to It's going to be a while, but I'm hoping in the fall I can come out for my gun course, if we're still allowed guns at that time.
Yeah, I'm not gonna say what type of gun I have on here. Yeah, come on out.
We had no guns.
Yeah.
We had no guns.
We'll go down to Jugger's Wild, play some Nickel Frenzy with you and have some deep.
Yeah.
Play.
Anyway, so thanks a lot for coming on, Rex, and wanted to say thanks to all my listeners again. Join me next week. We will be back on the air, and I will be back on the road, and let's see what's happened. There's a lot happening around this fiscal cliff stuff, and we need to find out what's happening. We'll talk about that next week. So thanks a lot, Rex and Marcia. Great talking to you, and listeners, thanks for being with me this time again. Good night.
Thank you, Will.
And as I always say, TTFN, ta-ta for now. Join me next week if you can. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the show. I hope that you enjoyed tonight's topics. Whether you listened live, to a recording, or to a rebroadcast, I appreciate the time you share with me. We need to spread the message of liberty far and wide, so please tell your friends and family about the show. Thank you for helping to keep the beacon of hope burning. This is Stefan, your Patrick Come Lately, signing off. God bless America, and remember, L3, long live liberty.